The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
Investors should consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of investment company products carefully before investing. The prospectus contains this and other information about the investment company. Prospectuses may be obtained from your advisor and should be read in full. All guarantees are backed by the claims-paying ability of the issuing insurer. Withdrawals and death benefits are subject to income tax. If withdrawals and other distributions are received prior to age 59 and a half, a 10% penalty may apply. Shares, when redeemed, may be worth more or less than the original cost. On today's show, we discuss QLACs, or Qualified Longevity Annuity Contracts, which are fixed insurance products. QLACs are offered by Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, but are not offered by Cambridge Investment Research, Incorporated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Saulnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Today's show, we are going to continue our discussion on some annuity topics. We had some more questions that came up based on our conversation last time on the podcast here. I think we answered several questions or an extension of questions on flexible premium deferred annuities. And I think Jim wanted to clarify a few things on some other annuities. Whenever we talk about annuities, we end up with lots and lots of everything we bring up creates five or more questions from people, and that just kind of proves our point that annuities are very misunderstood. That being said, we are not we're not annuity pushers for any, you know, for lack of a better word, and but they are a tool, and the just like any tool, the correct tool can really help do the job. Using the wrong tool for the job can really mess things up, and that's exactly what can happen with different types of annuities. So be careful if you're considering an annuity. There's good ones out there. There's bad ones out there. And there's good ones used in the wrong way is just as bad. So just take some time to educate yourself and make sure you're dealing with somebody that knows what they're doing on those annuities so you don't find yourself with a big mess.
Well, I think the other problem is, and hello, listeners, I'm Jim, mm-hmm. Jim Saulnier, mm-hmm. certified financial planner here in Northern Colorado. City in the far northern part of the state called Fort Collins. I think what the issue with annuities is, Chris, is there's so many different types of annuities, but everybody calls them annuities.
Yeah.
That's the problem. And they think, listeners think, the financial press thinks, a lot of financial planners think they're all the same. And they're not. That's why I say when you think the word annuity, think dogs. And I don't think anyone would say all dogs are the same. Because a little chihuahua, my neighbor has a little like 3-pound chihuahua, is not the same as a 200-pound bull mastiff. They're bred for two totally different things. They have different purposes. They work differently. They operate differently. But they're both dogs. And annuities, everybody hears the word annuity, and they instantly think all annuities are either a Chihuahua or a Bull Mastiff. And they're not. And that's, I think, part of the reason there's so much misinformation on them. But you had said on a previous show, I don't know if it was the last one or the one before that, we should do more information on annuities because we get a lot of questions and a lot of misinformation. And I think they, in the appropriate place, can be a good tool. Not for everyone. But there's so many
misconceptions.
Misconceptions, I guess, is a good word. Mm-hmm. And just plain old wrong information on them. So the reason I'm pausing a little as I'm talking, I'm on that financial planning form. I was on it. I've been on vacation this past week. First time in 19 years. I actually took a week off and was not traveling. Usually I am traveling, and that is my quote-unquote vacation. And then I tie traveling into going home and visiting family, which I love and enjoy doing, but 5, 6, 7 days at home with family is not a vacation. And then I come back and I go to work. And it's really starting to bug me. And it seems everybody in this office takes time off but me. So this is my first week that I have taken off.
You just stayed here.
I didn't go do anything. I've worked in my yard for the past 4 days. And I've
thoroughly enjoyed it.
Although
working when it's 90.
The timing was terrible.
I'm not sure that sounds like much of a vacation.
No, weather-wise, it was terrible to say I'm taking the first week of June off. This was the week I was supposed to be salmon fishing in Alaska. Hmm. But as you know, I freely admitted here on the podcast, they're just like in retirement, there's sometimes not enough money to go around and you have to prioritize between the younger you and the older you. How much is the 65-year-old you going to spend? How much is the 85-year-old you going to spend? I had to prioritize and I decided to take the money that I was going to spend on fishing in Alaska and instead put it into building a big dog kennel. It's going to be the Taj Mahal of dog kennels for my as of yet unpurchased Chesapeake Bay Retriever. And I'm putting that money into fencing in a big chunk of my yard so the dog will be able to have a quite ample expanse of property that he can call his own when I'm not home. So this was the week I was supposed to be fishing. I said a couple of weeks ago to staff, to heck with it, keep it off for me. I'm going to do some yard work. And then what did we have? The mother of all heat waves since Monday. And it has been hotter than hell out there trying to work. And I don't. By 1 o'clock, I'm heading in. Usually by noon, but no later than 1, I'm heading in because it's just too hot.
Yeah.
And it's just, I'm not having fun anymore. I'm just sitting out there burning and sweating. And what I do is I then head back out about 6 o'clock in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's nice again.
From 1 to 6, that 5-hour block.
Nappy time?
I do nap, yes.
Yeah.
I will sometimes, I've realized daytime TV stinks.
Yes.
I haven't watched it in 19 years. Yeah. There's nothing
Some
on a daytime TV.
Stuff
oh my
there.
God, is it mind-numbing mush?
Yes.
Oh my Lord. Yeah. How many? I didn't realize.
How many judge shows?
Yes,
there?
That's where I was
Isn't
going with this.
I know.
There's a judge show on every channel.
Every channel multiple times. It's
and
crazy.
They're all jerks.
Yeah.
They're all loudmouth jerks who don't let the people talk and they talk down to the people and it's just and then the people themselves. This is daytime TV.
Yeah.
No wonder I'm working. But anyways, I did find what I was looking for on my iPad. We have very slow internet in this new recording studio. I just want to throw that out there again as the tech person in the office. There's nothing we can plug
wrote
into
it down
the wall.
This time. I forgot to move it this week. So
do we have to move it? Don't they have those extension things you just plug into an electrical outlet and it's supposed to pump it throughout the office?
Well, yeah, but moving what we have is free.
Well, if it works. If
you're looking to blow more money, we can...
No, I'm not looking to blow money. Okay. I just took a week off. I'm looking to blow money. I'm looking to save money again. But the internet in this room...
It's in that corner mostly. Mine's sitting over here. Just fine, actually.
Not me. On my phone. Barely moves here. Okay, so what I kind of want to do on today's show, and Chris mentioned it either last week or the week before, listeners, that I should spend a little more time talking to y'all about annuities. So we're going to build it in through questions. I'm not just going to bore the hell out of people and just talk about annuities. If we have a question on them, I'm going to try to talk about them. And we did get a flexible premium deferred annuity question, which I answered. And then another listener from Tennessee sent me an email pretty much telling me, you didn't really answer the guy's question. And he wanted me to expand a little bit more on it. So I'm going to polish up these two emails. And then we got this one very short email, Chris, from February on annuities. And just one question, one sentence. And this question kind of opens the door to talking about annuities. So during this week that I've been on vacation, I went on the FPA form. You know, the Financial Planning Association is FPA. They have this form where advisors can post questions. And there was a question from nearly a month ago. And that's why I didn't answer it, because I don't know if anybody really pays attention to something more than a month old. Asking a question about required minimum distributions and annuities. Mm-hmm. And nobody really knew the answer. Except me, when I was reading it, I was like, no, you guys are wrong. This is the answer. This is how it works. Mm-hmm. So I thought I might talk a little bit about that on this show as well, and maybe one of these days post the answer on the FPA form. So the original question on a flexible premium deferred annuity came in way back in January. And I thought we did a pretty good question, pretty good job on a show. I forget which one. It was sometime in February or March, I think, that we answered this. And then this email has no date, and neither does the original one says January 22nd. This email doesn't have a date. Someone pointed out that it didn't quite answer
one of the questions in the
original
email.
Right. No. So let's get to that question, not the original. Well, the original one was fairly straightforward. He said, I stumbled upon the possibility of putting after-tax money into a flexible premium deferred annuity. I understand that I can contribute as much or as little as I want to this annuity periodically during the coming years. And I will have an annuity when I retire based on my contributions between now and retirement. It's my understanding that a portion of this of my annuity payments will be attributable to my premium payments and will not be taxed, but I will pay tax on the portion of my annuity payments that are not. He has to use that damn word again.
Attributable.
To my premiums. Is this correct? If so, how is it calculated? Perhaps you could discuss how these annuities work, their pitfalls, and the formula the insurance companies use to calculate my periodic payments. And that's the part I missed, was the formula, if you remember. Mm-hmm. And that's what we answered on the last one, and the answer was, it's in the policy.
In the policy statement.
In the policy, in the back, generally in the back, will be a chart. Per $1,000 of annuity value and your age, it's kind of one of those slide charts. You find the dollar value on the x-axis, your age on the y-axis. You go down the lines until your two fingers touch, and that's how much income you'll get. That's generally how it's done. But there's a few things in this email, the first and the second, because the second email said, I listened to your show on flexible premium deferred annuities, and I have now more questions than I did before hearing your show. And I think he meant that as a compliment. I don't know. He's giving us a dig, one or the other. The email question you read asked how the payments are determined, but you never answered it. Can you? Yes, we did on the last show. What are the tax implications of taking money out of the annuity? Do I have to take income, or can I just hold it? I guess what I'm asking is, how do I determine if I should consider one of these annuities? Every time I hear the word annuity, I instinctively think, yuck. And then he just signed it, George in Tennessee. So let's talk a little bit about that. What they are talking about, folks, in this annuity, and I don't want to waste too much of this show on it, it's called a flexible premium deferred annuity. It is a type of annuity that allows you to continue to put money in. That's why it's called flexible premium. Most annuities will only allow money to go in once. Right. That's it. Just that's one
single
time.
Premium is single, what those are called.
Single premium, or some will allow money to go in for 6 weeks.
Set period of time.
A month, 6 months.
So you could technically make more than one contribution.
During
a very narrow window.
Yeah. But for the most part, annuities accept money just once. All annuities will have an income benefit. That's what you are buying. Don't forget this, folks. I can't stand when I see either an investment advisor bash annuities by saying, oh, you can have more money if you buy investments. And I'll sit there and say to them, it's not an investment. You're comparing an apple to an orange. An annuity is an insurance product. It is not an investment. Yes, you'll have more money in an investment. But an annuity gives you... Or less. Yeah. But an annuity gives you something that an investment doesn't. A guarantee you will never outlive your money. Because investments can run out. We did a whole show, Chris, on five ways your portfolio is going to run out of money in retirement. And I said only one of those ways is fun, and that's you spend it. The other four ways, which will be Wall Street loses it, your investment advisor takes it in fees, the government takes it in taxes, or the economy takes it in inflation. So inflation is going to reduce it, taxes are going to be taken from it, fees are going to be taken from it, or Wall Street's going to lose it. Those are the other four ways your money's going to run out. But with an annuity, if the money inside the annuity runs out, the insurance company will continue to pay you the negotiated or the contractually obligated amount that that annuity said they will pay you for the rest of your life. So you are buying longevity insurance. That at its core is what annuities are. Remember we had a question on this a very long time ago when we had the live radio show, but someone sent it to us as an email. This is the Colorado show. I know people listening right now, this is our iTunes dedicated show. We've kind of spun off the Colorado show onto its own. And remember my answer to him was he wanted to know why he should buy an annuity because he didn't have long life expectancy. I don't know if you remember that. I always remember this one. And I said to him, and actually it wasn't an email question. It was a live question. And I said to him, if you remember, and I can't remember what his name was. Let's say it was George. I said to him, George, I don't have boat insurance. Do you know why? And he kind of paused and was like, huh? I called about an annuity and you're talking about your boat? You don't have a boat? And I said, exactly. I don't have a boat, so I don't have boat insurance. You're calling me and telling me you don't have longevity and you want to know why you should buy a longevity annuity. And I told him, if he doesn't have longevity, he may not want to buy one.
Right.
So that was one of the cases where we told someone you may not need an annuity if you're looking at buying this income benefit, this longevity income benefit. Every annuity will have an income benefit, or it's not an annuity. So it will have one. Now, a flexible premium deferred annuity is a little different, though, folks. It is an income benefit that for the most part is optional. You don't have to turn it on. If you buy a single premium immediate annuity or a QLAC or a deferred income annuity, these are irrevocable income benefits. You can't turn it off. You can't just say, give me my money back. Instead, you have exchanged a lump of money for a guaranteed income stream no matter how long you live. Now, these income streams, Chris, pay a lot more than a flexible premium deferred annuity would pay for the most part, not all the time. But a flexible premium deferred annuity is a little bit different. The income benefit is optional for you to turn on when it is not owned inside an IRA. If it's owned inside an IRA and it is the only asset in the IRA, or you don't have any other IRAs, then I really wouldn't recommend you buy this because of required minimum distributions. At 70 and a half, the government's going to force you to take money out of this annuity. Now, in the case of a flexible premium deferred annuity, it's still not going to be a problem, though, Chris, because they let you put money in at any time and take money out at any time without losing access and control of the money. But when the money is inside, especially if it's on a fixed chassis, you will never lose principal either. So your money is protected. You're never going to lose principal. It only goes higher due to interest credits. Even though you haven't turned on an income benefit, that's an option, you still get access to your money. You still have the ability to take money out when you need it and put money in if you don't need it. Hence the name flexible premium deferred annuity. So inside a deferred annuity, it still has an income benefit, folks. And this was the overriding factor from the previous shows we did on it. It's just that if you want the income benefit, you turn it on. If you don't want the income benefit, you let this annuity sit there, and all what it does is earn interest. And if you want to put more money in, you can. If you want to take money out, you can. Now, all of these flexible premium deferred annuities, and there's a few that we like. There's one that we like from a company called Great American, but they allow money to go in at any time, Chris, as long as it's at least $2,000 at a time. And they allow money to come out as long as it's at least $500 at a time. So they're not a bank. They're not sitting there wanting $20 to go in, $50 to come out. However, the original email, did you pick up on this? He asked his question, his original email, when he discovered them. He said, as I understand it, I can contribute as much or as little as I want periodically during the coming years. No, it is not as much or as little as you want. It is as much or as little as the insurance company will allow. So again, in the case of the annuity that we like, $2,000 at a time has to go in, $500 at a time has to come out.
But those are the details you'll find out in each individual policy, and that's how some of these annuities will differ from one another, these types of details.
Correct. Now, do these flexible premium deferred annuities have a lifetime guaranteed income benefit option? Yes. Mm-hmm. Do you have to turn them on? No. That's what makes them different from a QLAC, a deferred income annuity, or a single premium immediate annuity. These are other types of annuities we have talked about. Those annuities, Chris, the income benefit is non-negotiable. Right. It is mandated. Yeah. It is
and
there.
It's going to turn on whatever is agreed in the policy.
Mm-hmm. But a flexible premium deferred annuity pretty much lets you leave that money there until you want to take, and you don't have to. You may never need an income benefit. So why would you use a flexible premium deferred annuity? They offer, if they're on a fixed chassis, not the variable chassis, if they're on a fixed chassis, these annuities pay a set amount of interest every year. That's called the declared rate. We talked about that on the previous show. Just go to our website, folks, or the podcast, and search for the show on flexible premium deferred annuities. And if you go to our website, just go to Jim Helps. That's Jim, HELPS.com. JimHelps.com. Right on the homepage is a link to the dedicated website for the podcast. And we have a search box on that page still, Chris, don't we? I think we do.
Yes, there used to be. I haven't looked recently,
and
but there should be.
You can type in flexible premium deferred annuity, and the shows should pop up right there so you'll know which show it is. You can listen to it right from there or figure out what show it is and then go on iTunes, find it there, and download it that way. iTunes, you can't really search for individual podcasts on iTunes. That would be a neat feature for them to have. They don't have that. So you can scroll through all of them until you find the one, or just go to our dedicated podcast website, put in the word flexible premium deferred annuity. Our search box will show you which shows we talked about on them. And then you can learn a little bit more from the previous two shows. So then the gentleman asked, though, in this email, it is my understanding that a portion of my annuity payments that are attributable to my premium payments will not be taxed, but I will pay tax on the portion attributable. I will not pay taxes on the portion that are not attributable to my premiums. Is this correct? What he's talking about is what in the industry is known as, well, it's a proration. It's the, my mind just drew a blank here of the technical name.
Exclusion ratio.
So that only applies, Chris, if he turns it on into an income stream.
Right.
So remember, you can open a flexible premium deferred annuity. You can put money in, take money out. While the money is in the annuity, it grows tax deferred, and it just builds up in there. If you own the annuity inside an IRA, there's going to be IRA rules. So I don't want to go down that rabbit hole on this show. He specifically said his is a non-qualified or a non-IRA annuity. And that annuity, he had his questions on. If he will, let's just say he put $100,000 in this flexible premium annuity, Chris. And it could be $100,000 in a lump sum, $10,000 a year for 10 years, whatever. He put in $100,000. It's now worth $200,000. I'm just using some round numbers here. Mm-hmm. If he calls up the insurance company and says, hey, I want to turn this on into a lifetime stream of income, what will you give me? He could call them or he could read the policy. And in the back of the policy, there'll be a formula that says for every $1,000, this is how much income you get. If you've got $200,000 in it, you're just going to take that and multiply it by 200. Mm-hmm. And that will give you how much income you're going to get. Or you can call the insurance company and ask them, hey, I got $200,000 in here. How much income will I get for the rest of my life, no matter how long I live? And they're going to give you some options. Do you want a beneficiary? Do you want a joint life, single life? Do you want a period certain, meaning do you want this annuity to pay for a certain period of time? Even if you and the other income beneficiary were to die, the annuity will continue to pay. Or do you want it to be a life only? I mean, there's all these other options. We'll talk about these on future shows. But if you annuitize it, that's what I'm getting at, folks. The technical term for when you contact the insurance company and tell them, take this annuity that right now is my money. I can put money in, take money out whenever I want. Take it and annuitize it. And that's when the insurance company will take the value of your annuity, Chris, and kind of remove it away from you. You no longer have access to that money. Instead, they are going to give you a guaranteed lifetime stream of income no matter how long you live. And that income may go up for inflation. It may go down for inflation. It may go up for inflation. It'll never drop. It's always going to be guaranteed. It may be level. It may increase. It may pay for life. It may pay for a certain period of time. It's all contractually negotiated. And no matter how long you live, it will continue to pay. And it may pay after you die, depending on how you structure it. In that particular case, the insurance company is going to give you what is known as the exclusion ratio. And do you want to explain what that is, or do you want me to keep chatting about the exclusion ratio?
Well, it's pretty straightforward that they're going to determine essentially each of your payments, how much of it is considered return of your money, which would be tax-free, and how much is them paying you additional benefits above and beyond. So they don't time it out where, you know, there are some instances where you take money out of something and the first money that you take out is money that you put in the first place. They call it return of principal. And it's not until you burn through all of that that then you start receiving money that's taxable. That's not the case once you annuitize in this instance. Once you annuitize, they're then going to treat every payment as a partial return of principal and a partial, you know, benefits and above and beyond. I don't know. I don't really want to call it interest or anything, but it's additional benefits that are taxable that are going to come to you, and they'll give you the number and tell you what that is. And that exclusion ratio is going to hold, and as you receive income on those payments, that's how you're going to report the portion that's not excluded from taxes on your taxes for as far as income goes.
Right. So in my example, you put in $100,000, it grew to $200,000. That's a fairly straightforward, almost straightforward exclusion ratio. It's not going to quite be 50-50, but it's going to be very, very close. And the insurance company will give you that exclusion ratio and every year send you a 1099 that says, out of this, let's just say it was 50-50 to make the math work here. They will say, okay, let's say they were giving you $5,000 a year on that. Payments will probably be higher than that, but let's just say $10,000 a year. So you're getting $10,000 a year out no matter how long you live, and they'll tell you out of that $10,000, X amount is taxable to you, X amount is not. And here's how that works, folks. That will continue until all of your initial $100,000 was returned to you under the non-taxable amount. So if the exclusion ratio was exactly 50-50 and you were receiving $10,000, that means every year $5,000 is a return of your money.
So it would take 20 years in your example to have received the $100,000 back of your
Correct.
Original principal.
Once you receive all of your original principal back, and the insurance company has to track this, not you, so you don't have to worry about it. Once they have sent you back all of your money, 100% of your annuity payments now are taxable to you. Because the IRS says, well, wait a minute, there's no more basis in that annuity. And think about it, folks. You've lived long enough. You got all your money back. We're not talking interest. The IRS tracks your basis. You got all your basis back. After 10 years, you probably got all of your money back in the sense, Chris, you got, remember I had a 50-50 exclusion ratio, just to keep the math simple here. So it's really after 10 years, you actually got your $100,000 back. But in the eyes of the IRS, you got $50,000 of your money and $50,000 of interest. And they taxed $50,000 of it. As far as most people look, they'll say, hey, after 10 years, I got all my money back. I got my $100,000 back. But in the eyes of the IRS, it took 20 years before all your basis, all your initial principal has been returned. So you've got those two periods of time, folks, on these style annuities. But that is only if you annuitize. What makes flexible premium deferred annuities so unique, the annuitization, Chris, is what?
Optional.
Optional. So now you have a case where there are no required minimum distribution rules, at least right now, with non-qualified, this is annuities that are not inside an IRA. Non-qualified annuities have no rules to take money out. You can put money in. And while money is in them, they grow. And while that money is growing, the IRS doesn't tax it. Annuity money is not taxed until it's withdrawn. So if you have a flexible premium deferred annuity that allows you to put money in, as I said, this gentleman thought under his rules, hey, I could put as much or as little in. No, you have to follow the rules of the insurance company. The company that we chatted about had a rule that $2,000 or more has to go in and $500 or more has to come out. These aren't major numbers, Chris. These aren't huge dollar amounts that we're talking. So they're still fairly low dollar amounts that can go in and out of this annuity. But while the money is in the annuity, and let's just say you keep putting money in as a savings vehicle, it's going to pay interest. They can pay interest at a declared rate, which right now is about, I've seen them around 2.5% to 3% a year right now that they're paying in a declared rate. The declared rate gets set every year, so if interest rates keep rising, declared rates will keep rising. They're essentially a one-year payment. So what you're going to earn that year. Then there's other ways of earning interest in them as well. We'll talk about them on future shows. But the point is, these annuities will never drop in value. They're just going to earn interest. They're a good place to leave safe money. That's where we use. And they're a safe money alternative. They just sit there, earn interest.
And give you the option of turning on an annuity in the future.
If you want it.
If you want.
But you are not forced to take money out. And if you put $100,000 in and it paid 3% in the declared rate, you earned $3,000 of interest. You don't pay taxes on that $3,000 though, Chris. It sits inside the annuity. And the IRS doesn't force you to take it out. Only when a non-spouse beneficiary inherits it will there be any type of required distribution issues. As long as you own it, the person who opened it, or your spouse owns it, in other words, he or she inherited it from you, there are no required distribution rules. So the money continues to compound tax deferred inside the annuity, even if the annuity is not inside an IRA. But now, what happens when you take money out? Because remember, on a flexible premium deferred annuity, you can put money in at any time, take money out at any time. So what if you put in $100,000 and 5 years later it was worth $130,000, just making these numbers up. And you call up the insurance company and say, I need $10,000, send me $10,000. Can you just take out $10,000 that you put in so you don't pay taxes on it?
Yes.
You can?
Yes.
No.
Before it's annuitized?
Yeah, before it's annuitized, you cannot.
Oh, really?
They abolished that rule in 1987. Pre-87, you could.
Is this the LIFO-FIFO change?
Yes.
Okay.
So pre-87, what Chris
I didn't realize these still stuck to that yep. These changed too.
So what Chris is talking about, LIFO is last in, first out. FIFO is first in, first out. Under the old rules, the way the government treated this was under FIFO. First in, first out. First dollars in are the first dollars out. So if you put in $100,000 and it grew to $130,000 and you wanted $10,000, the government said you have to go through your first $100,000 before you're even going to reach the $30,000 of interest. That was FIFO. That was very good. Mm-hmm. So you could get all your money out and leave just the interest in.
Right.
Well, the government changed that. And I believe the change was made in 87. I could be wrong. It was somewhere in the 80s, but I believe it was 87. And they went to what is called LIFO, last in, first out. They grandfathered existing annuities prior to that. So if you're lucky and you have an old one from the 80s, you can still specify what money is coming out and take your money out first, tax-free. But under the new rules, interest always comes out first. So that, to me, would be the biggest downside of one of these annuities. Unless the annuity is inside an IRA, then it's always taxable. Or if it's inside a Roth IRA, then it's always tax-free. But if it's in a non-IRA, you have to recognize interest comes out first. But is that really a bad thing? In the case of a bank CD, you pay interest every year anyways on that money. If you're buying safe money and you put your money in a bank CD, even though you don't take the money out of the CD, you still have to pay taxes on it.
True.
In the annuity, you don't pay taxes until you take it out. Some people say that's a bad thing. I say it's a flexible thing. You don't have to take money out of the annuity. But what if you had a big deduction one year? I would look at taking money out of a flexible premium deferred annuity with a lot of built-in money if you have a big deduction you can benefit from. Child going to school, so you're getting a tax benefit on that, a casualty loss, a medical expense, although I don't wish anyone to fall ill. But if you have big deductions, what better way than to balance it off with a distribution from the annuity? And if you open that annuity in an IRA, it's always going to be taxable anyway, so it's a moot point.
Right.
But nowadays, remember that, folks, on a flexible premium deferred annuity, the first dollars out will be interest. And the government is pretty much just saying, Chris, look, we're not taxing you as it grows. We're not taxing you as it compounds. But we want our money. And we have no required minimum distribution rule. We have spousal continuation rules, if you leave it to a spouse, to continue this tax-deferred growth. We're going to tax it when you take it out. So they could have made the rules a lot less favorable, and they didn't. They just kind of changed it and said, we're going from FIFO, first in, first out, to LIFO. Last in, first out.
Yeah, I haven't dealt much with the flex premium versions of these deferred annuities, and I was under the mistaken impression that the flex premium gave you that flexibility of going in and out. But it makes perfect sense that they wouldn't have that exception. But
Well, they used to, and these were too good to be true back then. It was just you could put in all this money, you could grow it, you could take out your money, leave the interest in, leave it to your spouse. It could continue to go and then leave it maybe to a child who takes it out at a low interest bracket. So, I mean, these were really good. But anyways, that's not the rule anymore.
Right.
So while the money is in the annuity, it grows tax deferred. But when you take dollars out, the first dollars out are taxable to you. Only when you get to your dollars are they tax-free because of the return of your dollars.
Right.
So I wanted to make mention of that because both emails asked about it. How will it be taxed? Because the original email said, I will not pay taxes on my portion of the annuity payments attributable to my premiums, but I will pay taxes on my portion attributable to growth. Is this correct? Yes. I mean, you are.
And the tax rules, this is what another part, a prime example of confusion with annuities. The tax rules pre-annuitization and post-annuitization are different because there's no exclusion ratio and proportionate taxing when it is just a lump sum sitting in there. It's only after you pull the trigger and annuitize, handing over the money essentially to the insurance company, saying, I don't want access to this anymore. Instead, I want the income benefit. Then they do the proration thing. So it can be very confusing. But just remember that it's up to the point when you turn it on and start receiving it. There are certain tax rules. After you turn it on and you're receiving these periodic payments automatically, then the rule is different. It changes at that point.
So let's take this now to another level that neither emailer asked about, But I want to tie into a question that I recently read when I was on vacation. Well, I am still on vacation. I came in today on Thursday to record the show and to landscape around the office. But tomorrow, Friday, I'll be off my last day, and then I come back on Monday. But let's take these flexible premium deferred annuities or a traditional deferred annuity, which allows only one premium and no subsequent premiums. But a deferred annuity without the built-in annuitization, because a lot of people don't want to annuitize and receive an income stream, Chris, but they are looking for a place where their money can grow tax, not necessarily tax-free, let me explain, principal protected, where their money is protected. We use these annuities in the office in transitional phase of retirement planning and distribution phase of retirement planning. I do not use them in the accumulation phase. They're not an investment.
Right.
During the accumulation phase of retirement, stay out of these damn annuities. You don't need one. Invest your money. If you're in your 20s, 30s, 40s, you don't need one. But as you start getting into your 50s and 60s, and you're getting in that transitional phase, and you're starting to worry. You still want growth, but you want principal protection. You might want to take your principal protection money and consider these annuities and keep your growth money in investments. Don't put it all in these annuities and say, hey, this, I'm not going to be in the market anymore. No, no, no. You still need money in the market, folks, okay? If you're listening to me on iTunes and if you're listening to me on Google Play, you guys are do-it-yourselfers. You know how to invest. 90% of you have your money at Vanguard and passive low-cost index funds. You know what you're doing from that standpoint. But you're also sitting around thinking, God, I'm not a spring chicken anymore. I don't have 10 years to wait to recoup a big market drop. I don't want all my money in the market. So you start looking at what? Money market accounts, the Vanguard Prime Money Market Account, paying a percent. Woohoo! And you're sitting around thinking, geez, what do I do? I don't want it all in the market, but I don't want to take it all out of the market. I need to start looking at some principal protection. Well, 15 years ago, you could buy a bank CD paying 6%. You can't anymore. So we started as a firm looking at non-annuitized. You're not giving up anything. Just a flexible premium deferred annuity. I want clients to be able to put money in. I want clients to be able to take money out. But I want that principal protection with higher interest rates. Right now they're paying about, again, the one that I tend to use is paying about 2.85 on a flexible 1 year interest. You're not, it's more, it's sad. It's still outrageously low. Yeah. But it's better than a damn money market account for 10, 15, 20, 30% of your money as you take big investment risk with the rest of your money. You're just trying to put a little money off to the side, Chris, that if you do approach retirement and your investments are down, you don't have to delay retirement. You don't, whoops, I spilt my drink. You don't have to delay. I talk with my hands. I talk. Yeah. You don't see me, listeners. Give me a paper towel or a napkin. I talk with my hands, and I knocked over my, fortunately, emptied.
Just a little melted ice.
Melted ice from my iced coffee. What I'm trying to get at, folks, is where we start to position these annuities and look at these annuities is with an option to just have a place where you can park maybe the first 1, 2, 3 years of expenses you're going to need in retirement in a vehicle that's going to give you access to it to take out the money as you need it, to put more money in as you deem appropriate, but not worry about principal loss, but earns more than a bank CD or a money market account. That's kind of how we position these. Mm-hmm. Okay. One of the biggest problems people have with the more traditional annuities is the inability to flexibly take out money. That's why we like these flexible premium deferred annuities. They don't want to annuitize it, Chris. They don't want to call up the insurance company and say, you keep my $100,000 or $200,000, and I'm just going to take income for the rest of my life. So insurance companies came out with kind of a hybrid between what I described as a flexible premium deferred annuity with no income benefit and an annuitized annuity with a lifetime stream of income. And they did it by adding what is known in the industry as an income rider to these annuities. I could do 5 hours on income riders. Mm-hmm. All's what I'm going to do, though, is explain what an income rider is. Is you don't annuitize. You still have access to your account. And I will fully disclose right now, I'm not a huge fan of income riders. I don't really like them. I've seen some really good ones years ago when they first came out about 10, 12 years ago. Today, not so much. Yeah. 10, 12 years ago, the income riders, in full disclosure, I have one. In my own Roth IRA, I won't say with what insurance company, and I bought mine almost 12 years ago because I looked at this income rider and I thought, y'all are crazy. You're going to give me that much guaranteed? So I bought one. 2 years later, the annuity closed. You can't get it anymore. They can't get rid of it because I own it. New income riders I'm not a huge fan of, but they're still being sold out there, so I want to talk about them. So if you have one or if someone is selling you one, what is an income rider? An income rider still gives you the ability to get money out of your annuity. However, it's an option. You don't have to turn it on. But if you turn on the income rider, the insurance company will say, okay, Chris, you turned on your income rider. We will give you X amount of dollars from your account. We'll let you withdraw this. They call it an income rider. I call them a withdrawal benefit. They're going to specify to you, Chris, every year how much you can withdraw. And as long as you don't withdraw more than that, if your annuity runs out of money, they will continue to pay you. Again, folks, not a huge fan of them anymore. If someone is recommending you consider one, you may want to talk to me or someone else who's very knowledgeable on annuities to truly give you the opinion on if this income rider is worth it or not. You have to pay for this benefit. That's probably the biggest reason why I don't like them, Chris. And the way they charge for them is very misleading. And we need to dedicate a show to them. Yeah. What I want to get to is this withdrawal benefit, though, Chris, is often well in excess of any RMD amount. And that's what makes them very unique. So what they do is, let's just say, let's go back to my initial storyline. You put in $100,000, it's now worth $200,000. But I said it wasn't inside an IRA. Let's say it was inside an IRA. You don't have to have it in an IRA. You can have it in or out. Let's just say it's inside an IRA. That's what this question was on the FPA form. He said, I have a client with one of these annuities with this withdrawal benefit. And the way the withdrawal benefit works, folks, is you are allowed to take out what the insurance company tells you every year. And it usually begins at about 5 to 6% of the annuity value. Mm-hmm. Well, the RMD, your required minimum distribution in year one, is what? 3.7.
Yeah, less than that. Less than the
It's much less than 6.
Yeah.
It's usually about 3.7. So that means on a $100,000 annuity or $200,000 annuity in my situation, your RMD is about $7,400. But with a 6% withdrawal, you're taking out $12,000. Mm-hmm. So you're taking out $12,000, but you only needed to take out $7,400. The IRS, obviously, This is not annuitized, Chris. You have full access to your account balance. You can go in there, because all's what the insurance company did in year one. You had $200,000 in your annuity. They let you take out $12,000. In my example, it's 12. Could be 10, could be 12, could be 15. All annuities are going to be different. They're going to tell you every year, and the dollar amount stays constant. So if they told you it's $12,000, then forever it's $12,000. It's not coming from the insurance company, Chris. It's coming from your money. So you had $200,000 in it. They're going to give you $12,000. You now have $188,000 inside your annuity now. So it's not magic. They only gave you your money. Well, to the IRS, they say, hey, this isn't annuitized.
Right.
You took out $12,000. It doesn't matter to us that the insurance company is going to guarantee you this $12,000 forever, even if your annuity runs out. Right now, your annuity has not ran out. You took out $12,000. And they're going to say to you, we only wanted you to take out $7,400. So they will allow you to use all that extra money, that $4,600, to reduce what?
RMDs from other
IRAs. Exactly. Well, the question on the FPA form was this. And the question was, based on the IRS aggregation rules, which is what you just talked about, mm-hmm. the excess withdrawal amount that you took out of that annuity IRA, because the insurance company said, hey, Chris, with this guarantee we have, you can take out $12,000. In my example, I'm just making that up. You're sitting there and you're saying, well, gee, my RMD was only $7,400. Mm-hmm. I've got $8,600. Is it? I'm trying to do the math in my head. $4,600. Yeah. Left over. Mm-hmm. Well, the IRS lets you aggregate other IRAs, and you could reduce the RMDs by that excess amount.
Yep.
And you don't have to take it out if you don't want it. So this guy wrote that. Based on the IRS aggregation rules, the guaranteed withdrawals can be used to satisfy RMDs from other IRA accounts. He actually wrote to potentially satisfy. He can get rid of the word potentially. They do satisfy. But then he wrote, does that guaranteed income still count towards satisfying a client's total RMDs once the annuity balance reaches zero? This seems confusing, as the IRS guidelines on the fair market value are different. Any insights would be greatly appreciated. This is not confusing, FPA member. I guess I should write to him and answer it. Four people wrote. None of them had the answer. You know this because of Natalie Choate. You were with me, I think, at the Retirement Income Summit where she talked about SPIAs, single premium immediate annuities inside an IRA. And what happens when you annuitize an IRA? The first thing, there is no longer what, Chris? A December 31st
what?
There's
no more balance.
Exactly.
That you have to worry about. Mm-hmm.
The IRS says, wait a minute, when you buy an annuity that's only going to give you an income benefit, and you have no balance left, you only get income, it is no longer a defined contribution RMD rule. It is a defined benefit rule assigned to that IRA. And the defined benefit or pension rule, because it's essentially a pension you just bought, is 100% of the income payments from that annuity will satisfy the RMDs of only that annuity.
Correct.
So, keeping that rule in mind, when you have these deferred annuities with no rule of annuitizing, but they give you this withdrawal benefit, I already said, all's what they do is let you withdraw money from your annuity. As long as you don't withdraw more than what they tell you on day one, because it never changes, what they tell you you can withdraw, as long as you withdraw that, they will allow you to do that every single year. And if you are still alive and there's no money left in the annuity, they will start paying you. But the minute that annuity reaches zero, what does the IRS do, Chris?
Considers it annuitized.
Exactly. So 100% of that $12,000 now, in my example, your RMD was $7,400. They were giving you $12,000. Because of the aggregation rules, and this was a withdrawal, it's not annuitized, you still have $188,000 in that annuity that you had full access to. Of course, if you took the $188,000 out, the insurance company's not going to give you the lifetime income anymore.
Right.
You don't get your cake and eat it too. A withdrawal benefit, folks, is exactly what it sounds like. Withdrawal benefit. They're going to let you withdraw a certain amount every year, and as long as you don't take out more than that, they're going to continue to pay you. But there's no ambiguity here, folks, and any financial advisors who are listening, there's no ambiguity here. When that annuity reaches zero, it's now annuitized. In the eyes of the IRS, there is no longer a December 31st account balance. So it is no longer the RMD rules of a defined contribution plan that apply. It's the RMD rules of a defined benefit plan that apply, or a pension. And those rules are what?
That 100% of the payment satisfies the RMD for that annuity only.
Exactly. So as soon as, in the case of an IRA, as soon as the annuity reaches zero, the insurance company is going to keep paying you the $12,000, but there is no longer aggregation rules. There's no longer applying any of that money towards reducing RMDs of other IRAs.
Right.
But while there's still money in that annuity, it will apply. And here's where having the ability to put more money into that annuity come into play, does it not? Because if you have an income benefit or a withdrawal benefit, and you keep pumping money into that and never let it reach zero, you could continue to use that to offset excess RMDs from other IRAs, because you have a December 31st value. That's why a lot of these annuities with withdrawal benefits do not allow more money going in. Now, the old MetLife, they're now called what, Bright House Financial or something. I don't know why they came up with that and got rid of Snoopy. But they had a product very similar that allowed dollars to keep going in. So you could turn on a withdrawal benefit, and as long as you kept putting money in, it never reached zero, and the withdrawal benefit was a lot higher than the RMD, and that was a good little product. They don't have it anymore, but that was one that allowed you to continue to put money in so it never would reach zero, and you would still have that withdrawal benefit and allow you to offset RMDs from other IRAs. They don't have that anymore. So did I explain that okay, you think, kind of?
Yeah, and it's, just one more example that annuities can be very complicated, knowing the rules. And this is where people, and I think the insurance industry did themselves a huge disservice in the past couple of decades by having these complicated things, and they didn't do a good enough job describing them and explaining them to people. And so people knew exactly what they were getting and what they, why they were getting it, what the benefit was, and understanding the rules on these things, that people got burned because they ended up having the wrong tool, or they were sold something they really didn't need, or they, they got surprise fees and penalties or things like that, and they got a bad name for themselves. They basically created bad publicity. And they're still having to live that down because you hear all the people, the person who wrote in, they, he says, as soon as I hear the word annuity, I think yuck.
Yuck. Yep.
That's the insurance industry created that.
And one thing I will say, because we didn't talk fees. Remember, folks, I said these withdrawal benefits, I like the older ones that I referenced a few times. I don't really like the newer ones. I think the cost of them is very less than transparent. Let's just put it that way, Chris. Mm-hmm. Chris and I can figure out the cost because we understand them. I think a lot of individuals can't. They hear, oh, it costs 0.3% or 1%. Not really. It's actually a lot more than what it sounds. And we'll talk about that on another show. But what I can say, back to the original flexible premium deferred annuity, I just kind of went down this withdrawal benefit because you hear about them added to the chassis of a flexible premium deferred annuity or a deferred annuity. You hear them attached to them all the time. And I wanted to answer this FPA question. And maybe I'll reach out to the original poster on the FPA form, send him an email and say, hey, look, here's how it works. But when I explain it and you hear about it, you're like, oh, God, that makes total sense. Mm-hmm. Soon as it reaches zero, okay, I get it, yeah. But a lot of advisors don't even understand how it works. That said, what are the costs of a flexible premium deferred annuity? Not with any of these riders and all this, just a place where you can park money, get principal protection, take money out when you need it, put money in when you have excess. What are those costs? Well, if they were built on a fixed chassis, not the variable chassis. The variable chassis will allow you to invest some of the money or all of the money inside the annuity in the stock market via what is known as separate accounts. They look like mutual funds, but they're really called separate accounts. Those have high fees. On the fixed chassis, it costs you a whopping zero. And before people scream, that's impossible, the insurance company needs to make money, or before a financial advisor writes to me and say, you know they're not free, your client's paying for it. Yeah, they are paying for it, Chris. They're paying for it with what is called the yield spread. It is no different than how a bank makes money on a CD. Now, some people who hate annuities will argue, well, if the insurance company had no costs, if they didn't have to pay their employees, if they didn't have marketing costs, if they didn't make the evil profits, they could pay people a lot more than what they do. Yep. So that's the cost. I'm not going to dispute that.
No, so could a bank.
Exactly. So could everybody. If we all of a sudden decided making profit and living our lives and buying things we like is totally overrated, and we just functioned as a society by doing everything for free, I could have a Bentley in the driveway right now because the Bentley Motor Company would give me one because it's free. Everybody gets what they want. And I would also be able to put people in these annuities with higher interest rates because no one's making profits anymore.
Right.
Look, I get it, advisors. Those of you out there who hate these annuities and you hate, and again, Chris and I take an agnostic approach. We really do. I have told just as many people you're a fool if you buy this annuity as I have told people I think this annuity can help you. I really am agnostic on them. They're just a tool, but I understand how they work. And yes, a fixed annuity, it makes money off of the yield spread, no different than a bank. But no one vilifies a bank. Oh, the bank's only going to pay you 1.5% interest on your two-year CD or whatever they pay nowadays. I don't know what it is. Oh, they're going out and lending that money for 3% or 4%. They're evil. If they didn't have to make a profit, they would be able to give you more money. No one ever says that.
Right.
But when you buy one of these annuities, they truly are zero. They do pay me. I get, you ready for this? 0.6% of what you put in as compensation for opening this annuity. I charge 1% to manage, well, we don't, but we used to charge 1% to manage assets. We don't do asset management that way anymore. We cap our fee. I don't want to bore people on that. But 10 years ago, I used to charge 1% to manage assets. No one questioned me forever. And that came directly from the client. Mm-hmm. No one ever questioned me on that. Here, the money doesn't come from the client directly. Yes, I suppose if they didn't want to pay me anything, they could pay 0.6%. Well, it's only for year one.
Right.
So I don't know how much more they would pay. 0.1% more in interest? Right. I don't know. But you see where I'm going with this? Mm-hmm. So the insurance company, yes, they pay me 0.6% to put someone in. And I tell that to clients. If you buy this annuity from me, I am going to make 0.6% of what you put in. That's why we don't charge you for our time on opening this annuity. I'm not going to double dip. I'm not going to charge you to help open this annuity and get paid. But these people who scream about these annuities and high fees don't understand a fixed annuity has no fee. So then they'll say, oh, but they do. They would pay you more if they didn't have to pay your advisor. And I love reading how I make 10 or 12%. I wish. Show me one of these annuities I can make 10 or 12% on. I get 0.6%. Not a whole hell of a lot of money. And that covers our cost of helping a client open it. And then I got to service the annuity. So how does the insurance company make money? The yield spread. If they guarantee, remember, every year they have to declare the interest rate. So if the declared rate is 3 and they earn 3.5, they get to keep it. Mm-hmm. If they earn 5, they get to keep the difference between the 3 they promised you. But if they only earn 2, or if it's an investment, but they mostly buy bonds. They mostly lend the money out. Insurance companies are the biggest holder of bonds out there, biggest private holder of bonds. If they bought a bond from a company or a government that defaulted on it, they take the loss. You still get whatever the guaranteed interest rate is. Mm-hmm. It's no different than how a bank makes money. So I just want to point that out to clients. Yes, they make money off of this, but you don't pay it directly. You pay it indirectly through the yield spread. Yes, I freely admit if the insurance companies were nonprofits, if I didn't have to be paid, if they didn't have overhead because all their employees did this for free, if they weren't looking to make a profit and stay in business, they just wanted to break even, they probably could pay
more. A little more.
Absolutely.
Yep. Now, other types of annuities.
Totally different.
Totally different story. So he was just talking about fixed annuities. As an extension of our, we were talking specifically about the flexible premium deferred annuities, which are on a fixed chassis is what we call it. But there's a whole wide world of other types of annuities out there, and those fees can get crazy and convoluted and hidden and
Absolutely.
Much higher than they might appear on
and
the surface.
And when you start adding complexity to these, you put on a rider, which is an option. I want an income rider. I want a withdrawal benefit rider. I want a death benefit rider. When you start putting on all these, it's like buying a new car. You got the base model, and then you can get all these different packages, and it starts adding to the cost.
Yep.
So yes, you can take something that's very simple and make it much more complex than it needs to be. You start putting bonuses on. We've warned listeners in the past, and I'm going to start warning them again in the future. When someone tries to sell you a bonus annuity, substitute the word bonus with bogus, because it is. There ain't no frickin' bonus. It's bogus. It's BS. It's bull you know what. Run, don't walk from anyone selling you an annuity with a bonus, because it's bullshit. I can say that word on the podcast.
Oh, you can?
Yeah.
I edited it out last week when you said it.
Well, on the radio, I can't say it, but you can.
Are we just going to go all full potty mouth on the podcast?
Well, we don't have to. You can go bull beep if you'd like.
Okay.
I think our listeners are mature enough to handle that word. When you hear bonus, think bogus. But the other thing with bonus annuities, Chris, cost. You are not getting anything for free. Trust me on insurance companies. They ain't giving you anything for free, folks. So when you hear bonus, you're paying for it somehow, yep. Either with reduced interest, so a bigger yield spread, or some type of embedded fee. Yeah, we're going to give you this bonus, but we're going to charge you this additional fee.
Take it back from you, yeah. Out of your back pocket.
Yeah. So watch out. But if you simply have the base model of the car, no frills, no leather package, no option one, nothing like the Lexus I just bought with this new package thing I put in there. If you don't do that, you just get a the regular version of the car, the regular version of the annuity on a fixed chassis, it ain't going to cost you anything except the yield spread. But my God, we got to give them something.
Right.
And it just, somehow the insurance company is vilified by those who hate they love hating variable annuities because those things are expensive as anything. But they really have no argument against these annuities as far as fees go because there are none. It's all embedded into the yield spread. And I just tell that to clients. This is how they make money. And I don't know how much they're earning. I would be shocked if they're earning 10. They can't be earning 10% and paying just 3.
No.
But I don't know if they're earning 4, 4.5, 5, whatever they're earning, they're taking the risk. They're contractually giving you, though, a certain amount of interest, and they're going to tell you how much that is every year. Same thing with MYGAs, multi-year guaranteed annuities, a little different than these, but these are like an old bank CD, and you can get like a 3-year, a 4-year, a 5-year, a 6-year, and they're going to pay you a certain amount of interest every year, just like a bank CD. And then at the end of that period, you get your money back. They don't cost you anything. How does the insurance company make money? For the 2, 3, 4, 5 years that you lock your money in this MYGA, if they're going to guarantee you 3%, Chris, over 5 years, I'm just making this up, they hope to earn more than 3% over 5 years. And they get to keep anything above that. That's how they make money.
Yep.
All righty. So hopefully that took care of everyone's questions on that, flexible premium deferred annuities, that is. Maybe it lent a little bit of light on how to deal with RMDs when you have one of these withdrawal benefits. And then what happens when the annuity reaches zero, which you want it to. On a withdrawal benefit, Chris, I didn't say this. You want to be around when that annuity reaches zero.
Right. Because that's when they start paying you more than what you
have. And you're alive.
Right, and you're alive.
There's no, don't buy a withdrawal benefit and hope you die with money in the annuity. You did it wrong.
Right.
What you want to do is buy one of these withdrawal benefits and gleefully look forward to the day there's no money left in that annuity to withdraw. Because now the insurance company has to pay you forever.
From their pocket.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that music means we're here at the end of another episode, of the Retirement and IRA Show podcast. Are we going to attach the radio show onto the
you
end
should,
of this one?
You should, because that was a Maryland listener, I think it was.
Yes, we answered a couple questions embedded in an email we received from a listener from Maryland. So we'll go ahead and bolt that on. So after the short break here, at the tail end here, you'll get some information about how to contact us. JimHelps.com is the short version. The nice young lady will explain a little more detail how to do that, how to contact us if you have questions. But right after that, you'll be able to hear, if you want to stick around, the Colorado version of the Retirement IRA Show. It's about 45 minutes or so in length, and we answer some completely unrelated questions compared to the annuity show we've got here, but still things of interest. So thanks a lot for joining us this week, and we'll be back with you next week with a brand new podcast.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit JimHelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
Rocky Mountain High, Colorado.
Welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show, Colorado edition. On today's show, we are going to probably spend most of the time answering a question from a listener about long-term care insurance. We'll see how that goes. If we finish that up, we might dive into a few other things. We've got plenty of listener questions kind of in the deck of emails that we've received. So my name's Chris, and I'm here with Jim Saulnier, and Justin Fundalinski is actually joining us since we're going to be talking about long-term care insurance. Hi, Justin.
Hello. Thanks for having me again.
Sure. You guys did a nice job on the landscaping outside.
Oh, yeah. Been working hard out there.
Sorry I didn't hear about that.
We walked up right as the last shovelful of mulch went down.
Yeah.
It was perfect timing.
Yeah. So, Jim, are you doing this kind of stuff at your house, too? Your landscaping?
I'm doing a lot of landscaping at the house, yes.
Sounds like a very summery thing to do.
It is, of course, the week I took off of work. I came in today to landscape the office and record the show. It's been the hottest week of the year. And the year's young. The summer's young.
True, but it feels like summer finally.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, officially.
It's just hot all week.
It's not officially summer yet, I guess, but it feels like summer.
Yeah, definitely feels like summer. Okay, so we have a lot of email questions to get to. This one I pulled out of the stack of stuff. And I thought we would dedicate the Colorado show to it, even though this listener sent this to us from Maryland, not Colorado, so he's out on the East Coast. But his question has to do a little bit with long-term care and a little bit with retirement planning in general. So I thought our listeners in Colorado would find the answer beneficial and helpful as they plan for their own retirement someday. So again, my name is Jim Saulnier. I'm a certified financial planner, and of course, Chris Stein was the voice you heard initially. He is a finance instructor at Colorado State University, and sitting to my right is Justin Fundalinski. He works in the office mostly doing a lot of tax projections, tax planning, and retirement planning as well, but taxes and long-term care are his two specialties, at least here in my practice, and that's why we have him on the radio today. He can answer some of the long-term care specific questions from this listener. But also, Chris, we wanted to give you a shout out and a kudos. You told us last week after recording about your recent promotion, I guess you could say, at CSU. So I wanted to congratulate you and let our listeners know that, if I could sing, I would sing the Jeffersons tune.
Moving on up.
Yeah.
That's kind of an odd reference, but I guess it's appropriate.
Well, you got a little promotion.
I don't get
there.
A bigger office or anything. And we're already on the top floor, so. But yes, I am now the director of the financial planning program at CSU, at Colorado State University. There's been a recent retirement. Dr. John Hopkins, who was the director prior, has retired this year, and he helped kind of build that program and came from a very prestigious program down at Texas Tech. He actually was there when they were building the program at Texas Tech, so one of the top programs in the U.S., probably considered the top.
Absolutely, Texas Tech
program.
Is, yeah, exactly. So CSU is not far behind Texas Tech?
We have a little catching up to do, but there's a Texas Tech flavor there. John certainly brought a Texas Tech flavor to the
program. So you have barbecue? So.
We do barbecue as often as we can. Actually, funny you mention that, every fall, in the first week or so of class, they bring in barbecue and feed all the business students for free.
No kidding.
Yeah, they bring in, they cater it in from a restaurant.
And it's always barbecue?
And for some reason, every year it's barbecue.
Maybe so. Because John was from Texas Tech.
Maybe. Hard to say.
So what's it going to be this year with you running the whole?
Well, it's for the whole college. It isn't just for our program.
Oh, just, okay.
So gotcha. John wasn't actually, maybe he suggested barbecue. I don't know. He wasn't the decision maker.
But Chris is the new person in charge over there on the financial planning program. And I wish you the best with that. Hopefully the students will continue to learn and enter what I think is a fine profession. It is a profession that is in need of some direction and some clarity, but it is a fine profession. Okay, so what we want to do now, folks, is we're going to read to you the email from a Maryland listener. This came in a while ago, too. I'll reach out to this Maryland gentleman. He sent this email on April 18th. So we're prompt 2 months in answering his email. But things are tough because we get a lot of emails, and I had been taking some time off, especially in the month of May, and was not here, and Chris and Justin filled in, so that was much appreciated. And then we had the holiday right in the middle of it as well, and just kind of messed things up that we pushed this out 2 months in getting his name answered, his question answered, rather. Okay, so he begins, Dear Jim, Chris, and Justin. It's the other reason I brought you up here, Justin.
Oh, there
he
you
was,
go.
He was thanking you as well. My name is, and he gave his real name, but we're going to call him as we always do. We're going to call him George.
Would you like me to play the thing?
You could play the little thing.
Just what I always wanted, my own little bunny rabbit. I will name him George, and I will hug him and pet him and squeeze him.
I'm not a bunny rabbit.
I will be 61 years old this April. And then he put in parentheses, today. So I guess he wrote this on his birthday.
Oh, nice.
I'm just guessing. I will be 61 years old this April today, so let's say happy birthday. So happy birthday. My wife and I share the same birthday, but she is 7 years younger than me. That's odd. I didn't imagine that.
That's not one we've, I think, ever run into.
You get the same birthday, just a different year.
Yeah, interesting.
At least you know you're never going to forget your wife's birthday.
True. I have two kids with the same birthday.
Really?
Really?
That's unique.
So that's also one you don't hear about much. But
and they're not twins.
They're not twins. They're 7 years apart, I think.
Just like him and his wife are. Seven.
Yeah. True. But these are siblings. Just happen to be the same
some
day.
Oddities like that in my family. An aunt and a cousin on the same birthday. Their mother-daughter. Yeah, very different. Very strange.
Interesting. Yeah.
Okay. So... Back to the task at hand. So again, so he wrote this, I believe, on his birthday. Him and his wife share the same birthday, different year. She is 7 years younger than him. Then he said, on December 13th, 2017's show, Chris answered my question on Social Security. Thank you, Chris, for all your help with my decision. I truly appreciate it. All the assumptions you made on my behalf due to the lack of information I gave you were correct. So you did.
Well done.
Do you remember that December 13th, 2017 show?
No. I do not. But I'm glad that it worked out.
But I'm glad it worked out. Okay. So then he begins. Jim, your statements about the accumulation phase of retirement savings compared to the transition and retirement phase being so different has been enlightening to me. And that is true. And I'll take a little pause right there. We often say the easy part of retirement planning is the accumulation phase, saving your assets. Because in those times, market volatility is actually your friend. When you are saving, when the only cash flow going into your retirement savings is a positive cash flow, in other words, there's no money coming out, you're only putting money in. When you are only putting money into your portfolio and the market is going down, you're just buying more at a lower price, especially if you don't need the money for 15, 20, 25, 30 or more years because you're saving for retirement, then that's the easy part. To me, it is. What do you think?
You're either doing it or you're not doing it, right? You're either saving enough. Now, it could be hard to save because you'd rather spend the money on something else, or maybe you don't have enough money to save the amount you really need to be saving, but deciding to do it and actually putting it away, it's pretty much as simple as that for the most part. So things don't get too overly complicated until later.
But the transitional phase, that's the phase usually beginning right around 55, between 55 and 65, that phase where you're not quite young enough that a down market is truly a buying opportunity, but you're not quite old enough where you should be protecting a large chunk of your portfolio, say, and prepping it for spending. In other words, you're not taking money out yet from it. You're just in that transitional phase. A Catholic would call that purgatory. That's kind of that area between heaven and hell. Mm-hmm. We just kind of hang out for a little while until God lets you in. So you're in this phase. That's what it is.
I get it.
I was raised Catholic. There's purgatory.
I get it, yeah.
I never quite knew where it was, because the nuns always said hell is below us, heaven is above us. Can never figure out where the hell purgatory is.
Are we not in it?
I don't know.
Maybe this is. Maybe this life is purgatory.
I'm not going to look for it.
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, I don't want to be there either. But anyways, so the transitional phase is kind of like purgatory of retirement. That's when you're between usually 55 and 65, or 55 and retirement, and you're not quite, again, young enough to truly consider a down market, a buying opportunity, but you're not old enough where you're spending actively from your portfolio and positioning your assets for spending. And then there's the retired phase, and that's where you have to spend your assets. And we're going to dedicate future shows to this, because that, to me, is even harder than the transitional phase, the retirement phase, when you're trying to spend your assets down. And this is what he gets to. So he continues. I have been able to save close to $1.5 million in a broadly diversified portfolio, riding the ups and downs of the market over the past 35 years. But I am now in the transition phase between accumulation and retirement. Nearly all, and we were just talking about this, Justin. Nearly all, oh, now I just lost my place. You know what it is? There's no paragraphs in this. It's just one big paragraph.
It's okay. Just put your finger on it and go down.
I can't find where I left off.
I've been teaching my son how to read like that.
Wait, yeah. Just stop making fun of me. I'm just trying to... Hold on.
He loses his spot all the time. Drives me insane.
I found it. All right. See, I found it.
Okay. Yeah. We'll just keep your finger and then you follow.
Sound out the words.
Yeah. I got it. Okay. All right. Okay. Nearly all... Well, he has... You all can't see this. They can. They just like making fun of me. This is just one big paragraph with no... paragraphs. So there's no indentation. There's no nothing. It's just words. And I lost my place.
Again.
Most of my savings is in pre-tax accounts. I have 3 months of savings in a taxable account. And I have just $10,000 in a Roth. He's got $1.5 million.
Yeah.
Tax time bomb.
Exactly. And we just hit this with someone we're working on right now, Justin.
Yeah.
With their tax issues.
With regards to Social Security.
Exactly. My first question is this. Is there an ideal percentage of my money that I should have in each of the three accounts at retirement? And he must listen to our podcast, because he put in parentheses, always taxable, maybe taxable, never taxable. So we talk about that all the time on our show. That as you save for retirement, folks, there are really three types of accounts you're going to put your money into. An account whose money, when you withdraw it in retirement, will always be taxable to you, and that would be like an IRA or a 401k. This gentleman has a 403b. He wrote that in parentheses. I didn't read that to y'all, but he has a 403b. That is a type of tax-deferred annuity. He probably is a teacher or works in some sort of governmental agency at the state level. And they have a 403B. It works just like a 401K. So that's all you have to understand on that. He's going to put money in, get a tax deduction on it. But when he removes his money in retirement, he's going to have to pay taxes on it. And it's always going to be taxable. Every withdrawal from that account will be taxable. And then he referenced what we call maybe taxable accounts. Those would be like a bank account or a brokerage account, not within the wrapper of an IRA or an employer retirement account, just a regular account you open. It has no tax qualification at all. We call those maybe taxable because, Justin, you may pay taxes on them, or you may not.
You may or may not, depending on what your basis is in the account, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
your tax
status and bracket.
Yeah, your tax bracket also. Yep. Yeah.
So you may take money out of those accounts and owe no taxes on it, or you may take money out of those accounts and have to pay taxes on it. And then we have what we call never taxable accounts. And to us, those are mostly Roth accounts, whether it's a Roth IRA style account or a Roth 401k style account. Now, I know there's a lot of insurance agents who might be listening to this, and they might be up in arms right now screaming about cash value in life insurance. I'm not a huge fan of that. We're not big life insurance salesmen here. We believe in it. We believe there is a time for permanent life insurance for some people, especially with special needs children. But for the most part, we're not big fans of this grow cash value, borrow it tax-free in retirement. Too many things can go wrong with that. So for the most part, we look at Roth accounts for the never taxable. He's asking Justin and Chris, is there an ideal amount for him? Well, yeah, let's talk about how much should be in all three, because you shouldn't be overweight in just one. And my fear is the man is 61. His wife is 7 years younger. She's 54. But he has $1.5 million in a 403B always taxable account. He has $10,000 in a Roth and 3 months cash in the bank.
And he may not have a big tax window because his wife being so much younger, if she's got money coming in and they're filing jointly, he won't have that, you know, that opportunity that we describe oftentimes on the show where you have stopped your job so you have no salary anymore. And there's some years leading up to 70 and a half when you have required minimum distributions starting, and you can take that opportunity to convert these taxable monies to non-taxable monies in the Roth by taking advantage of the fact that you don't have other salary, other money, other income coming in that pushes you into a higher tax bracket than you'd like to be. But he, you know, here's a situation where with that big age difference, and I don't, does he say whether his wife is working or not?
He doesn't say.
If she is, that kind of throws a bit of a wrench in that particular plan, because that's the obvious thing to look at.
Well, I will say,
when you have someone with these big accounts.
To answer your question, we can extrapolate a little. Mm-hmm. When he was giving you accolades, I kind of glossed over some of it. But within all the accolades he was giving you on answering his question on December 13th, 2017, which clearly didn't mean much to you because you don't remember it.
They all mean something to me. They just all run together.
He wrote, I remember when he said the assumptions you made on your behalf were correct. He did write, you helped us with our decision to delay Social Security until 70 so I can benefit my wife, who spent the majority of her career raising our children, a more difficult job than mine and also far more rewarding. So I'm guessing that maybe she didn't work or isn't working.
Didn't, but I think she is now. That sounds more familiar to me now.
Oh, you remember this case?
A little bit more now. I'm not positive, but I think she's working now.
Okay.
Because the kids are gone now.
Okay. So,
but
either way on that, I would say that there's, he asked specifically, is there some sort of percentage that he should have in each one? And I think that you can't ever lay a percentage on it because there's so many variables. And Chris right. brought up one of them. You got to think of other aspects too. Is there other pension income out there? Or other income that's going to be forced on them for any reason, because all of that is going to cause more and more of a tax nightmare later on when RMDs start. So, you know, the more I think forced income you're going to have, the less you're going to want to want to have in 401k or IRA type accounts.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, when we say, oh, go ahead.
So I just think it for everyone needs to be kind of customized, find out what your income projections are going to look like, what your RMD projections are going to look like, and you know, do what you can to diversify yourself tax-wise. There's no magic number. It's not as easy as that.
Well, I would propose to maybe think about it a different way instead of as a, you know, what percentage should I have mixed in here? The ultimate goal, if you can pull it off, is to have everything in tax-free accounts. Well, there's no downside to that.
Yeah, if you were going to pick one of the three,
right,
and say, which one would you want all my money to be in, I would love it all in a tax-free account, absolutely. Right. And if you were to say, pick one account that you wouldn't want all my money in, it would be what he has, all of the money in the always taxable
right.
account.
So if the kind of the panacea of this is to have it all in tax-free, the goal then would be not to set a certain percentage, but would be to try to get as much into those types of accounts as you can at the lowest tax rate possible.
Right, exactly.
The more you can pull that off, if you can achieve 100% movement over to the Roth, congratulations, you've gotten to the best situation you can have. If you can't, then you're going to fall short of that, but anything you can get in that direction is going to be beneficial if you're taking advantage of, you know, lower than normal tax rates because of some situation, or managing your tax story a little bit better than just kind of handling it randomly every year.
So what I want our listeners to know, because we're just rambling on amongst ourselves, and I kind of want our listeners to get a grip of what we're trying to explain to this gentleman. He's done everything the way he was told, the way, I don't want to say it's a government conspiracy, but the way the government has created retirement savings in this country, the incentives they give you during your working years to delay income now by putting it in this 403B or your 401K or your traditional IRA or your thrift savings plan if you're a federal government employee. And then receiving a match on it, Chris. He didn't get into any of that, but I'm assuming he got a match. So he put money in, his employer put money in. There's incentive there to save. Mm-hmm. And I think the financial media fails at this. And I think a lot of accountants, it's not public accountants, but CPAs who specialize in tax preparation. Because when you go to someone who is doing tax preparation, they're just looking, guys, at reducing your taxes today. What can you do now? Come see me. Come pay me some money. I'll do your taxes, and I'll show you what you can redo to reduce your tax burden today. And they're not looking at what's going to happen when you start getting into the transitional phase of retirement, as this gentleman is, and he's starting to realize, my God, I have nothing in never taxable and maybe taxable accounts. I have it all in a always taxable account, and I'm running out of time. I'm 61 years old. In 9 more years, the government's going to force me to start taking money out. Not only that, I see a massive, Justin, widower tax penalty. I see a big problem if he or she were to predecease each other. Now they're going to be hit with even more problems. So we'll talk about this a little bit more, but then his second question is long-term care. And what should they do to protect themselves from that?
Great. So that music means we're at the end of our first segment here. Please stick around with us. We'll continue this discussion with this person's email, get into that long-term care discussion as well. This is the Retirement and IRA Show. When we come back from this short break, we're going to hear one of the top songs from 1935 as we look back to the year that Social Security started. So stick with us, and we'll be right back.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Baby, please don't go. Baby, please don't go.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That is, of course, Baby Please Don't Go. And this version is the 1935 version with Big Joe Williams singing this. This is roots of the song can be traced all the way back to 19th century American songs dealing with slavery. But obviously things have evolved over time. And this particular song has been remade, remixed, redone in various formats over the years. The song was inducted into both the Blues and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and is considered to be, quote, one of the most played, arranged, and rearranged pieces of music in blues history.
And that was the 1935 version?
That was.
Interesting.
I don't know if this one was recorded in 35. This one wasn't, but it was Big Joe Williams who was famous for singing it back in 1935.
Gotcha.
He might have recorded it a little bit later than
that. And for those who don't know of why we always lead in the second segment of this radio show with a song snippet from 1935. 1935 is when Social Security was first created. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a homage to Social Security and the fact that we answer a lot of questions on this show on Social Security and obviously on our blog, helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. That's a blog that we maintain with a lot of good Social Security information on it. And, of course, Social Security is, Chris, perhaps the biggest and most valuable retirement planning tool most people have access to.
Right. When you value it as a retirement asset, it oftentimes is more valuable than practically anything else they have.
Right. And that's mm-hmm. people may have a hard time believing that because they see this tangible asset that they may have, this 401k or 403b in this listener's question that we were answering earlier. They see that tangible dollar amount, and it's hard for people to understand what the lump sum dollar value of a lifetime stream of Social Security income would actually be, especially in these low interest rate environments. It would be a very, very large dollar amount to begin with. Mm-hmm. So that's why we say Social Security is a very valuable retirement planning tool, and we talk about it a lot on this show, so that's our way of paying homage to Social Security. Okay, back to this listener's question from Marilyn. We ended where he was talking in his email, and we were talking to him, that he did everything right, or at least right in the sense of the way it was taught to him over the past few decades. Everybody had drilled into their head that they were to save in these pre-tax employer-sponsored plans and keep delaying the taxes. The idea was delay, 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 delay. And the reality is that at some point in time, there's no more room to kick the proverbial can down the road. And that time period, at least as far as our beliefs go here on this radio show, is age 70 and a half. Because after 70 and a half, the government's going to force you excuse me, to start taking money out of your retirement accounts. And they do it for one simple reason. They want taxes. And money coming out of your retirement account, that's called a required minimum distribution. It's the minimum amount that they want you to take out. You can always take out more. They're not going to get mad if you take out more. That's just more tax money to them because this is an always taxable account. And he's asking, is there a way? Because he realizes now he has $1.5 million in an always taxable account. He's going to be nailed in taxes. And he's asking, is there a way? Let me see. My first question, is there an ideal percentage of money to have in each of the three accounts? And is there an efficient way to get it from my pre-tax to my Roth account while keeping my tax liability low? And that's why we have Justin here, because he knows taxes. So why don't you explain to us, Justin, the secrets of getting the money out of the always taxable and into the never taxable without any taxes?
The secrets really are projecting some good numbers to work off of, because we really don't know what your current tax rates are. We don't know what they will be. And that's what we want to kind of compare the future potential tax liabilities compared to any opportunities that you have under current tax rates to try and get it out at a lower rate and maybe put it in a Roth and allow for some completely tax-deferred and tax-free growth. So I think the best thing that anyone can do, not only him, is to project some numbers. Do some sort of, projections on your own, but there's some pretty complicated tax calculations that go into that. Or find someone or a retirement planner that has a solid tax planning software, understands taxes, and is able to put these projections together for him. I don't think there's any magic, you know, here's how much to convert now or later. It's going to be, let's get as much as we can out at this tax rate, but no more.
Yeah, it is definitely going to take some calculations, listener. We're not going to be able to tell you, well, if you just do this coupled with that strategy, your taxes are going to be lower. There are things you should consider if there's ever a down market and a lot of your aggressive investments, I don't know what your allocation is, are down. You may want to convert more then because you convert shares, but you pay taxes on dollars. So even though the dollar value of your investments is down, you can convert the same amount of shares or twice the amount of shares for the tax liability if you lost half. But that's really not a tax avoidance strategy. It's just trying to make lemons out of lemonade out of lemons. I think what he needs to do is really look at what your future tax brackets are going to be, both as a couple after age 70 and a half, your age 70 and a half listener. Remember, you're 7 years older than your wife. She'll only be 63, and you're going to be forced to be taking money out of your retirement account because you reach 70 and a half. It doesn't matter if your wife is 63. The majority of the money, the million and a half, is in your name. So you're going to be forced to start taking it out. Off the top of my head, your initial RMD is going to be about $55,000, and that's assuming no growth even in that account. If you have growth in the account over the next 9 years, you might be forced to take out $60,000, $70,000 as your first required minimum distribution. And coupled that with your Social Security, which you are going to delay to 70, you said. So at 70, you're going to be hit with a very, very large required minimum distribution and a Social Security benefit. The large required minimum distribution may subject more of your Social Security to taxes, and they're going to be hit with quite a bit of taxes in another 9 years. So between now and then, you need to start making some projections, and you need to look at what we think or what you think taxes are going to be in 9 years, what we think you're going to be paying as far as your marginal rate, and maybe over the next 9 years, just get money out in perhaps the 12 bracket, which used to be the 15 bracket, or the 22 bracket, which used to be the 25 bracket, because you can benefit from the low tax brackets we have right now that are scheduled to be removed the year before you turn 70 and a half. So right now you have the Trump tax cuts. You might as well use those to your advantage. To me, that's one of the best tax breaks he can have right now, is the low tax brackets that we're in under the Trump tax cuts.
Right. And as we say, a year ago when we were having this conversation, we had no idea those were coming. So the point is, you can't always predict tax changes that are going to happen. They do change. All you can do is, when something happens, you can make the best decision today to take advantage of opportunities that might come up. And I think, you know, most people would consider it likely that the rates aren't going to go down farther than they are now. And even before they went down, we were talking about the you know, if you were a betting person, most reasonable people would probably bet that tax rates are going to go up in the future.
Absolutely.
But they went down in the near term. So this, I agree, is quite an opportunity. And with some proper planning, you could get some of that money converted over into those tax-free accounts.
And the final thing,
without really overburdening yourself with taxes.
The final thing that I want to lay out there, listener, when you do these numbers, and if you need help with them, we're always here. We work with people throughout the United States. And of course, for our local Colorado listeners, we can help you with these projections if you're in a similar situation. You don't have to have $1.5 million in a retirement account. You can have $300,000 in a retirement account and be faced with the same tax situation. Should you have money in the pre-tax, never taxed, always taxed, or maybe taxed? And what is the best way to get money from the always taxed into a never taxed? And these type of calculations can be done, but don't overlook something, listener. The widower tax penalty. Your wife is 7 years younger than you. You're a man. You will probably die 5 to 7 years before her, even if you were the same age. This means your wife could be a widow for 14 to 20 plus years. And what happens is she will inherit that $1.5 million retirement account that you have. She will have to take required minimum distributions from it. She will lose the smaller of the two Social Security benefits, which would probably be her benefit. Her benefit effectively goes away, and she keeps your benefit as the survivor benefit. So there's a cut in her secure income with the smaller of the two Social Securities going away. Required minimum distributions continue, although they'll be, well, actually, I can't even say they're going to be dramatically smaller for her, because you guys are within 10 years of each other of age, so they will be a little bit smaller because she is 7 years younger. But she's still going to have quite substantial required minimum distributions. But the only problem is, Justin, she's going to be hit with much narrower tax brackets.
Right. What's going to happen is we all love our married filing jointly brackets because they expand greatly how much income we can have before we get taxed at higher rates. And pretty well, it's 2 years after your spouse passes away, you're going to get forced back into the single filers brackets. You can't carry that married filing jointly those brackets with you just because you were married and someone passed away. So you still have, you know, essentially almost the same amount of income. We lost a little bit of Social Security there, and maybe the RMDs aren't quite as large, but it's going to get taxed at a much higher rate because they're going to fill up the lower tax brackets quite a bit faster and have a higher tax rate applied to it on more dollars.
Exactly. So what I'm saying is, as you contemplate moving money from the always taxable to the never taxable, you asked, is there a tax-efficient way to do it? Well, right now with the Trump tax cuts, this is a prime tax-efficient way to do it. We have some of the lowest rates we've ever seen and probably will ever see. But also bear in mind, if we don't, or if you don't, if the 61-year-old and you and 54-year-old spouse don't start paying the taxes now, don't start getting money out of the always taxable to the never taxable now, you're just going to stick it to your wife as a widower. And when she has to start taking money out of those accounts because of required minimum distributions, she's going to be nailed in taxes. So maybe right now you're in the 22 bracket, but in the future as a widow or as a widower, because most likely you would pass away first, listener, your wife could easily be in the 30-something bracket. And who even knows what the tax brackets will be in 20 years? This country is in debt up to their eyeballs, and sooner or later taxes will go up. Although, as Chris said, we all thought that was going to happen. It still hasn't happened yet. But even if they didn't go, even if the Trump tax cuts stayed law forever, she still will be in a significantly higher bracket as a widower because of the sheer size of the money you have in the always taxable account. So you ask how to do it effectively. You got to look at not only effectively for you as a couple, but what is going to happen at the death of the first spouse. And the chances are your wife will still be in her 70s as she enters widowhood. And she could live well into her 90s. So you could have 20 years of this compressed tax bracket. I know what I'm talking about here because I've been single all my life. And I have the privilege of paying taxes at these very compressed rates. And it stinks. And that's what happens to people as a widow or a widower. Okay, so then he goes on to borrow from this as he was contemplating, what about long-term care? So he asked us, is it realistic for me, a 61-year-old male, 5'8", 235 pounds, with controlled hypertension, high cholesterol, and diabetes to qualify for long-term care insurance? If not me, I am sure my healthy wife could qualify. And I really did like the Pacific policy, and he's talking about Pacific Life, the Pacific policy you and Justin presented on a previous show. If I can't get it, I think my wife should have it, especially if I am not here to help her. So let's talk a little bit about that then.
Well, he's asking a couple things there, whether or not he can get it or not. Of the things that he listed, you know, a couple red flags for me would be the diabetes. That's not a deal breaker in any way, shape, or form. But type 1 typically is in a long-term care scene. Type 2, if it's managed, it might not be a deal breaker in that case.
But so, type 1 is?
Generally, yeah. Yeah. For the carriers.
And he
that,
doesn't say which one he has.
No, he doesn't. So that would be something for him to consider. But other deal breakers that generally, you know, pop up that we see, he didn't list. Like, you know, bad arthritis or multiple sclerosis or something like that. Those are the things that we often see that will be a decline automatically. Regarding his height and weight, there are some carriers out there that do go by some height and weight charts, and they will decline you based on that. But it's generally relatively forgiving, and I don't think it would be a big issue for him. And I've never seen the Pacific Life people actually rate on that, although I don't know if they use it in their underwriting or not. So I can't give a positive answer on that. But there's a couple things going on here. The one thing with Pacific Life is you can pay for it over time, but it is a hybrid policy. And the fact that all of his money is in a 401k or 403b, taking that money out to purchase that policy all in one lump sum or maybe over 5 or 10 years is going to be a tax management nightmare. So that's something he's going to have to consider. So can he get it? Maybe. Is the PAC Life policy right for him? Yeah, maybe. We could look at that because we could get it out over time because PAC Life does offer some kind of pay as you go, but there is an end date and the premiums are going to be higher than a normal policy. But what he was saying towards the end is right where I geared up, maybe for his wife. One, his wife is substantially younger than him, and if she was inclined to, she would be a good helper in his old age. So long-term care for him might not be as necessary, especially in the early phases where she can maybe pick up some of that work and help him out and lower the expenses. And she's younger, so she's got a lot more time to pay it off. So she might qualify for a policy where she could purchase it over 15 or 20 years, and this large the tax issue of taking money out of an IRA or 401k or a 403b to pay for these hybrid policies will be mitigated because it would be paid over time rather than all up front. So kind of a lot of moving parts there.
I would definitely
recommend if he's interested in that, we might want to sit down and have a conversation about it and really figure out what his ideal scenarios are.
One thing I want to add, because our listeners don't know all the industry jargon you were talking about, Justin. So when this listener mentioned a hybrid policy and Justin talked about a hybrid policy, let me explain to you what a hybrid long-term care policy is. They really came about because of the Pension Protection Act of 2006 that was passed, and they changed some of the taxation rules of life insurance and how life insurance, if you were to receive an advancement of a death benefit, would not be taxable if used for long-term care. So the industry started creating these what we call hybrid long-term care policies. These are not a traditional life insurance policy with a long-term care rider. I don't want to get into those policies. It's not what he asked about. We're not huge fans of those policies, of these traditional life with a long-term care rider. These policies that we're talking about are specifically designed for long-term care. As far as I'm concerned, they're a long-term care policy, Justin. They're not a life insurance policy.
No, 100%, yeah.
However, they have just enough life insurance to be a life insurance policy.
To call themselves life insurance and to be able to file the paperwork to create a life insurance policy
Correct.
In the state, yeah.
So what they do on these hybrids, because of the Pension Protection Act and how they tax these benefits now, these policies have just enough life insurance that pretty much equals 100% of the return of your premiums. And we're dumbing them down, but that's pretty much how they work. So if you put in $100,000, you're going to have $100,000, maybe $110,000, $120,000 of life insurance. Certainly not a deal from the life insurance side.
No, it's not for life insurance.
But what they have buried or built into it is if you take money out of the policy, and we can explain this on a future policy, Chris, because we're running out of time, but as you take money out of the policy, the benefit for long-term care is sometimes three, four, five times what you put in.
Right, yeah. So you can get your money back in one of three ways. It's you can just usually call off the deal and say, I want my money back, and that's the return of premium feature on it. The other one is you die, and you just get your money back in the format of life insurance.
Well, you don't get it. Your beneficiaries.
Your beneficiaries get it. Or three, and this is really the only place where there's any kind of leverage, but it's usually significant, is to take it out in the format of long-term care. And it comes out in two ways. The first one is a return of your a return of life insurance, or an advancement of the life insurance, and then there's an extension of the life insurance that carries on. So depending on how long of a benefit you buy, it determines how much you can get out.
And it's all tax-free. So if you, and the reason we keep talking about them in the sense that Justin talked about, unlike a traditional long-term care policy where you pay a premium forever, these policies are generally funded with one big lump sum. You're going to put in $30,000, $50,000, $100,000. Remember, that money's not lost. You die, the money goes to your beneficiaries. You call the deal off, the money comes back to you. But while the money is sitting inside this policy, it is leveraged tremendously for long-term care. So we kind of ran out because we got tied up on the first part of his question. Maybe on next week's show when we record it, we will talk more about these types of long-term care policies. I don't want to rush through them because I really do like them, and I think they're a wonderful way, these hybrid policies, to help people who are fearful of wondering, how are we going to pay for my care if I age and can no longer take care of myself? Or like this gentleman, I have a big age difference between me and my wife, or I'm a little unhealthy and she's healthy, and I'm worried that all the money's going to be used to take care of me, leaving her nothing. How can some of these policies help? We'll explain that, folks, on next week's show.
Perfect. So that music means we are at the end of this edition of the Retirement and IRA Show. So do tune in next week when we'll continue this discussion on long-term care. If you'd like to talk to us more specifically about your situation, just go to jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. On there, you'll find a variety of ways of contacting us. If you'd like one of our famous coffee and a second opinion meetings, or would you like to chat a little bit about long-term care or anything else we've talked about on the show today. So thanks for joining us. We'll be back with you next week.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.